Now, one of the real deficiencies of our tax laws is in relation to rehabilitation and renovation, because the laws treat such activity as capital improvement and depreciates it over an extended period of time, rather than considering it or any part of it as maintenance and allowing its deduction in the year or contiguous to the year in which the improvement is made. And this tax disadvantage is particularly applicable in slum areas and needs seriously to be corrected. I might tell you that another program which is in this bill is that the cities which have condemned slum properties will be assisted in rehabilitating and renovating them by the law through liberal treatment in the making available tax, making available mortgage guarantees and attractive interest rates. So that this is very well worth looking into as a possibility. So our tax system has impeded the building of more low-income housing and has often perpetuated the squalid conditions of slum living. I'm convinced that new efforts must and will be made to include provisions to change the tax code to encourage and even require sound maintenance in order to obtain tax benefits. I shall personally introduce proposals to that effect if they are not otherwise contained in the tax reform legislation which is coming before us. I might tell you in that regard that we will have a complete tax reform package submitted by the President before December 31st, 1968. This is the result of an amendment to the tax surcharge bill, that is a 10% surcharge tax bill, which I authored and which requires that these proposals be sent to the Congress by the President before the end of the year, as tax reform is something in which we're very, very far behind. Those of us who have been urging for many years that the private sector be given a major role in rebuilding the cities must now be shown that our faith was properly placed. The legislation is on the books. What is needed now is planning and implementation. The developers and contractors should come forward with a plan of action, and the mortgage banking community should come forward with the amounts required. Also, while I'm here, I'd like to put in a word for those in the black community who are building contractors or do building construction work of one kind or another. It would be very desirable to join them as partners in whatever efforts are undertaken in these areas, in black communities. And we will pass legislation very shortly to make available to them performance and bid bonds in order to enable them to compete for building work, as they find it very difficult to get performance and bid bonds themselves. We will do the same with that we intend to do with respect to insurance of small business against the casualties of operating in slum areas. Senator Percy of Illinois and I are developing a proposal along this line now, and it is really unconscionable that firms with as much as 20 years of experience in the building contracting industry should be unable to grow because they can't get bonds, and that's the situation today, so as to be able to expand their activities. Now, I have a very practical suggestion for you before I close, and that is that in the normal real estate firm, it would be, I think, most forward-looking and desirable if one executive, at least, could be detached for the sole purpose of dealing with all phases of this problem. That is, he would be the specialist in public housing, low-income housing, moderate-income housing, and become thoroughly acquainted with the law on the subject, become thoroughly acquainted with the levers that one has to touch in the state, in the city, in the federal government. And my office is wide open to anyone who wishes to use our services in that regard. We have an office in New York City. We'll be delighted to serve you. We facilitate a great deal of this for many communities, cities, towns, villages. We'll be delighted to do it for private business. We have no financial or commercial interest in it, so we're free as air to help you make money, if that's what it is, in order to get the important building construction going, both in renovation and in original construction, for those who live in slum areas. So I would hope that you'd put an executive on this who would become a specialist in it, and not only a specialist in the governmental part of it and the mortgage part of it, but a specialist in the community part of it, which is equally important. And you will find a tremendous field for the most gratifying kind of operation. Now, one last word, and that's about the executive himself. Such an executive could easily become the president of your company. And I'd like to give you an example of that. You mean you might think that, well, that's not the most money-making part of the business, putting together syndicates is, or some other aspect of your business. But let me point out to you that in American, and I, as again, as your chairman said, I do know something about American business. In corporation after corporation in the United States, the so-called public affairs vice president has ended up as the president, as government and public affairs have more and more become the essential consideration dominating the affairs of many great companies. And that vice president, who was always running around to meetings in New York, Geneva, Chicago, and San Francisco, of the Committee for Economic Development and the National Association of Manufacturers, and the committee that the Secretary of Commerce got together, turns out to know more about what's going on, to be more able to lead the corporation than anybody else in the firm. The fellows that are making the nuts and bolts are way behind the parade. So don't think that if you put a man on this, you're sentencing him to Siberia. Not at all. You may be putting a man on who will contribute the most to your total operations, will know the most, will find out the most, and will be the most resourceful and the most effective in your particular concern. But it cannot be done on a sideline basis. You have to have somebody who makes it his sole business to know all about it and do what needs to be done about it. And in addition, I'm selling now, and I'm selling you the best product in the world for the real estate industry. In addition, it will be a tremendous satisfaction to your young executives. And many people are finding it very hard to get young people into commercial activity nowadays because they're idealistic and they want to make some contribution to their time and they don't want to get off on the rabbit track of making money, period. They want some stimulus in life. They want some connection with the dramatic and exciting and revolutionary currents of our time. And these young people will be tremendously gratified to give some of their time to the kind of activity which I described. Now, this industry holds a big key in respect of what's going to happen in this country, in the slums of America, in the next 10 to 20 years. Because in my judgment, gentlemen and ladies, and I would be less than frank if I didn't tell you, I think there's a big time bomb ticking against us. I think if we do everything we're doing, including this very good housing law, and the conditions in the slums continue to fester as they're festering, you're going to have an enormous insurrection in this country. The time bomb is going to explode before we can snuff out the fuse. And it's only if we accelerate these efforts materially, both in government and especially in the private sector, that we have a chance. Now, we've got the resources, we've got the power, we've got the productivity, and we have the market. The question is, will we do it? And that's why, notwithstanding that I have to be in Washington today, for critical reasons connected with my being Senator of New York, to wit, negotiating on an $18 billion appropriation bill, in which I'm the ranking member, I came this morning at some personal sacrifice because I want to get something done, and I know this is the place to do it. Thank you so much.
Senator Javits, we are indeed indebted to you. Your words about our industry being challenged for the future are taken to heart. Your work and your courage have been indeed as dramatic and as exciting as you ask the real estate industry to perform. Once again, on behalf of the real estate investor and the sponsors of this program, I want to thank Senator Javits for coming here this morning, because I know that he has important work in Washington. His office tells me that he's scheduled to make a plane out of the airport here for Washington within about 3/4 of an hour. And I'm sure that those of us here who would like for the Senator to spend the entire morning in our discussions will understand and will excuse the Senator, because he does have important business in Washington. Once again, thank you very much, Senator Javits. This is not a political organization, nor are we discussing politics, but I'm sure our best wishes go out to the Senator as he leaves us this morning.
Helicopter to Newark and then by plane in order to pass the vote to break the filibuster on the Fortas nomination, which I think is disgraceful, a disgraceful abuse of the filibuster, and also to begin work in Washington on a number of sleeper amendments which are going into bills at the very end of the session. The most serious one that we face in New York is an amendment which would cut our Medicaid funds by $90 million and put into an extraneous tax bill by Senator Russell Long of Louisiana, voted by the Senate, which simply must be stopped. It's so disastrous to the Medicaid program of New York and other industrial states. There are other similar matters, including an effort to hobble school desegregation in southern states for the next 9 months in an appropriations bill. I've simply got to go down to Washington and begin to wage some of those struggles, and I want the people of New York to understand them, or why I will be unable, probably, for the next week or so to keep all my campaign engagements. On this amendment on Medicaid, if necessary, I'll have to cancel campaign engagements, lay them aside, and fight them down.
Further statements from Mr. Nixon, naturally, but I think he's already adopted the Republican platform, which commits him to a de-Americanization of the war. I'd like him to speak naturally to a cessation of the bombing, but frankly, whether he speaks or not, he's the fellow who can get it done. I cannot see how Vice President Humphrey, with all his good intentions, can do it.
Sir, the militarized zone in Vietnam is saturated with North Vietnamese and Viet Cong. Do you think it's realistic to ask them to pull back at this point when they've been fighting in there for years?
Of course it's realistic, because that would be the essence of a ceasefire. And in any peace negotiation, you've got to have a freeze in place and then pullbacks under some form of international supervision. Remember, we have got plenty of troops in South Vietnam, too. And so far, we do not seem to have been at all disadvantaged in military terms by the rollback of the bombing to within 200 miles of the DMZ. In fact, our casualties are materially down rather than up, so that those who said we would be overwhelmed by infiltration have not been proved to be right.
How does this differ from the President's comment, sir, that there has to be some quid pro quo here, some kind of gesture by the North Vietnamese? There isn't any difference, is there?
I just said that. Mr. Humphrey is trying to inch away from that position.
but he cannot really get unlatched from the commitments undertaken by this administration to the administration in Saigon. And if we're hampered by what they will allow us to do in terms of peace or in terms of relinquishing the combat responsibility, we cannot do what the American people want and should want done, to wit, begin to get out of South Vietnam.
Do you have a comment on the school crisis, the resolution worked out by Mayor Lindsay?
I was gratified by that resolution. I think it is an interim settlement until the lines of jurisdiction between local school boards and the Board of Education of the city can get settled. I've said before, and I'm glad to repeat, in my judgment as a New Yorker and with responsibility for federal aid to education, etc., committee sense, as everybody knows, I think that the way to resolve this is to give local boards an opportunity to deal with curriculum and policy, to have the Board of Education deal with collective bargaining with teachers and with the financial aspects of school operation, but to give local boards and the Board of Education a veto power, one upon the other, as to the local situation. They can deadlock, but neither can force a solution on the other. I think that's going to be the ultimate way out. But those lines of jurisdiction will have to be negotiated now. The teachers have given an opportunity to do that by going back. And when they're settled, then you can have a school system that's on a stable basis with decentralization a fact instead of a cause of anguish and struggle.
Senator, on a local level, former Governor Wallace of Alabama is having trouble with renting Shea Stadium. What's your view on that?
Again, I've already made my statement as to that. I'm glad to make it again. I believe in giving extremists a place to sound off. I felt the same way about Daley in Chicago as I do about Wallace in New York. And there may be good legal reasons or factual reasons, security and otherwise, why Shea Stadium is not proper. The court will determine that. But I hope the city administration will find some place where Wallace's extremists, much as I condemn them, much as I'm against them, and much as I think all New Yorkers are against them, can sound off.
It's a realistic comment on the Wallace phenomenon generally.
Well, I think it is a phenomenon. Yes, it's a phenomenon of anger and frustration. But governments are not run and peoples are not helped by anger and frustration and violence and recourse to summary measures and police states. And though there are big things said about the Wallace vote in the polls in the nation, I have tremendous faith in the intelligence of the American people. When they go into the privacy of that voting booth, I think you're going to see these Wallace expectations cut to ribbons.
How do you feel, General Lane? Who are they going to be here?
Realistically, I hope to very much. By those who are a minority to seek to control a majority and to prevent them from voting for Fortas's confirmation. Incidentally, it's the first time the filibuster has been used for this purpose, and I think the senators who are using it for this purpose will live to rue the day they did.
Senator, General LeMay is reportedly going to be the vice presidential candidate under Mr. Wallace.
Well, anybody who teams up with Wallace hits me very badly. I know Curtis LeMay. Great soldier, and I'm just terribly sorry, heartbroken that he let myself on the inside.
Senator Javits, yesterday,
I believe they'll give me their full support again. One paper here of I never predict victory by not resting on my laurels or coasting. Working extremely hard right now, this press conference, to make it clear that I also have work to do in Washington as New York senior senator. So people should be reasonable with me in terms of campaign
today.
Thank
right? Yeah.
Pete? Mo?
Do you want Mo yourself?
Yes, sure.
Mo, come on, please.
Sure.
Come on, there's a seat for you. Old friend of mine. Do you want us all together? We better bunch up a little bit.
Yeah.
Pete, why don't you bunch up a little bit?
Over on this side here. Take a shot of this, will you, please? Of all the people there.
There you go.
Sit down.
You.
No. You
get the other piece. That's
all. Okay. What do you say?
That's fine.
Good. This'll do it. I lived a long time for this day. That's all I can tell you, Harry. Right?
Yes,
been a long time.
Okay,
yeah. All right, man. Good. One column, does it?
You wanted to finish these guys around the way? How about now? Can you get it now?
Pete, my boy. We'll do good.
Okay.
I hope so.
Hope you do better. Good enough.
Okay, fellas, fine. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You're going to make the announcement, Harry.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah, why don't you do it? Gentlemen, if I could have your attention, and ladies, you all know Mr. Van Osdijk. He'll make the announcement.
The New York City Central Labor Council, whose affiliated unions represent 1,200,000 men and women employed in this city, has taken action endorsing the candidacy of Senator Jacob Javits. And I'm very happy, as the president of that organization, to make this announcement. In all the years that Senator Javits has been in public service, he has been fair and considerate of all of the people's problems, and more so of those who are in the fields that the people that we represent, the workers of this nation. And it's the policy of the New York City Central Labor Council, when an office holder does a good job, no matter who is the candidate opposing him, we see no reason for a change. We hope and wish that Senator Javits will be successful in his coming election, and that he will have the opportunity to serve the American people for many more years to come.
Mr. Van Arsdale,
is this the first time the council has supported a endorsed a Republican, sir?
No, the New York City Central Labor Council is a nonpartisan organization, and we consider the records of the individuals that are running for office, and decisions are arrived at on that basis and that basis only.
Mr. Van Arsdale, considering the fact that even though it is the policy of the Labor Council to endorse an office holder doing a good job, don't you think that because Mr. O'Dwyer has been working so long for labor, that perhaps this might be interpreted as a slap in the face to Mr. O'Dwyer?
Our nonpartisan committee doesn't undertake to slap anybody in the face. As I stated, when we review the record of a man presently holding an important office, and his record shows that he has been of outstanding service, there is no reason, in our opinion, for us to support anyone in opposition, or for the voters in the state of New York to support anybody in opposition.
Mr. Van Arsdale, you didn't support Senator Javits last time. Why are you doing it this time?
Senator Javits, I don't think, would have received the vote he did except for the fact that the members of our affiliated union supported him overwhelmingly. We did not take any official position on that occasion. But on this occasion, we felt it was necessary to endorse the senator.
Are you endorsing Humphrey for president of your organization?
Our Central Labor Council is endorsing Hubert Humphrey for president, and the way the tide is going at present, we look forward to Hubert Humphrey carrying this state.
Do you feel that the fact that Mr. O'Dwyer has not endorsed Humphrey was influential among your
That might have entered into the thinking in trade union ranks. Loyalty is very high on the agenda, and that may have entered into the thinking of some of those who cast their votes.
What about Mr. O'Dwyer's position on the war in Vietnam? Some labor leaders, particularly George Meany, supported the president, and of course Mr. O'Dwyer has not. Would that be another element in their thinking?
I'm not an expert on the war in Vietnam. We looked at this from workers' viewpoints, and we've taken this action, and we hope that the citizenry will seriously consider the record and the accomplishment of Senator Javits and follow our example.
Would you say it was a close race as far as who you would throw your support to, sir, and among the members of the council?
No, this was not a close race. This was a unanimous vote with the exception of one representative that asked to be recorded as not voting.
Mr. Van Arsdale, do you think that the endorsement of labor leaders has any more influence on its rank and file?
And a difference of opinion is not unusual in the New York City Central Labor Council. When you get 27 responsible elected labor leaders that represent 1,200,000, we always have a difference of opinion. But in this case, it was minimal. I don't believe that a representative of a union can expect his membership to vote for anybody that he suggests they vote for. And we don't suggest that to our members. I was at a very vital labor meeting last night of the rank and file, and every night I'm at such meetings. And we make known to the members of our trade unions that we, after analyzing the record of a candidate, have endorsed him. We appeal to our members to study the record of that candidate, and if they find, as we do, that he's deserving of support, under those circumstances, we ask the member to support him, to undertake to have the members of his family support him, and to have his friends and neighbors support him.
Mr. Van Arsdale, how do you account for the reported strong support Governor Wallace is getting from the labor movement?
I don't believe that. I think that's greatly exaggerated. There's nothing that we find in this area that indicates any such thing. There is, and it's understandable, some dissatisfaction with both of the major parties. And there are a great many people expressing themselves that this is a way to show a protest, to show dissatisfaction with both major parties. And there is something to that viewpoint.
What kind of a vote do you think, Wallace?
However, among all the people that we're in very close contact with, Wallace is not going to get any big vote. There are people expressing their angers and their frustrations, but we're confident from our analysis that when the people get closer to the time of voting and get into that booth, that they're not going to throw their vote away, not in this city and certainly not in this state.
Mr. Van Arsdale, you've endorsed both Hubert Humphrey and Senator Javits. Would it not be easier for a senator such as Mr. Javits to work with a president of his own party rather than one who views he does not always share?
That's a question to ask Senator Javits, sir.
Well, I mean, you don't feel that you would be doing Mr. Javits any harm by endorsing the opponent party for president?
I think your question would be a good one to address to the Senate.
Thank you, gentlemen. Gentlemen, the others on the platform are Mr. Yashevitz, who is the Secretary Treasurer of the Central Trades and Labor Council, a very old friend of mine. Mo, would you want to add anything to it? Thank you. And now the chairman of my own labor committee would like to read a letter which I have received. Pete Brennan, you all know Pete. Thank you.
This is a letter that the Senator received from the United Farm Workers Organizing Committee of the AFL-CIO, and I think you gentlemen realize that this was a question as to where the Senator stood on the problem with the farm workers. It's addressed to Senator Javits. Dear Senator, Dolores Ayota and my brother Richard have told me of the excellent position you have taken regarding to our strike, boycott, and also to building a union of farm workers. On behalf of the board of our union, the strikers and the many people who help us in this struggle, I would like to express our deep appreciation. This has been a very long and sometimes bitter struggle, but there is evidence now of increased willingness on the part of the agricultural community because of the efforts of people like you. I am sorry to say that this willingness is not shared at the time by the governor of our state. Our governor has the key to the means of settling this dispute, but as yet he has chosen to be an opponent rather than a mediator. We truly thank you for your support and agree with your statesmanship-like approach. Viva la causa, signed Cesar Chavez, director of the organizing committee.
Thank you very much, Pete. Any questions of Mr. Brennan? Well, may I first thank the Central Trades and Labor Council through Harry Van Osdale for its endorsement, which I greatly appreciate and which I will treasure. And I do not feel anything in my heart other than complete satisfaction to the over 1.25 million members of the Central Trades and Labor Council. I will not disappoint them in anything that they feel about me. Harry knows that, and Mo Yushevitz knows that. If I ever do disappoint them, it will only be not conscious on my part. And I want to thank Pete Brennan very much for being here today and for reading this letter from Cesar Chavez, and to tell you that what Mr. Chavez is referring to is the fact that I am standing up for the law, which is in my committee. I'm the ranking member of the Committee on Labor and Public Welfare, to give unionization opportunity to the agricultural workers of the United States, in which I thoroughly believe and which I hope we can get made into law, if not at this session, which has only a week or so to go, certainly if I'm reelected in the next Congress. Now, gentlemen and ladies, any questions?
Senator, General LeMay made certain statements yesterday about the possible use of nuclear weapons in Vietnam. What's your reaction to his statement?
Well, obviously, General LeMay is a hawk. It's well known that he is. I would consider any contemplation of the use of nuclear weapons in Vietnam to be directly contrary to American policy, not only in Vietnam, but in the world. We have made it very clear that we will not use nuclear weapons except when attacked with nuclear weapons. This is the settled policy of the United States, and it's the right policy. And secondly, the American people, in my judgment, have made it very clear that they have not opted for escalation of the war in Vietnam or a military solution, that they want the war negotiated to a settlement. And that is what I propose. I spoke at length on this matter last night. If I'm reelected, I expect to be, according to the way in which the Senate operates, a member of the Foreign Relations Committee. I shall strive even more strongly for an end to the war in Vietnam by negotiation, because I will have an even better position than I did before.
Senator Javits, there has been talk that the choosing of General LeMay as Mr. Wallace's vice presidential candidate will broaden the third party to the point where it may further hurt the Republicans, and especially Mr. Nixon's candidacy. How do you feel about that?
I believe that that the candidacy of Governor Wallace and General LeMay, and I might say that I'm always disheartened when a man who is such a preeminent American hero in a chosen field, to wit the military field, allows himself to be captured for a cause which is directly contrary to those very best interests for which he served in his primary profession. I believe that the cause of Governor Wallace will diminish, and that General LeMay, with all respect, will not save him, and that the American people will understand that repression, totalitarianism, is no substitute for law and freedom and government, and that if we have to solve our problems Governor Wallace's way, then we're fighting for something which is not America, but some new authoritarian Wallace state, in which I do not believe the American people believe. And I might tell you, too, that